All right, let's take our Bibles and turn to Psalm chapter 127. This is a five-week series of messages, and I've titled this first week, The Gift That Keeps On Giving and Taking. And I want to go to this classic text of Scripture. You'll understand why when we read it together, but this classic text of Scripture when it comes to family life and parenting, it's got something for all of us here. You follow along as I read. Psalm 127, beginning in verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Another translation says, behold, children are a gift from the Lord, the fruit of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them, and he shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. You know, comedians have a way of giving us some wonderful perspective in life, especially when we're going through a difficult time. They make us laugh. I always love a good comedian who's good and clean in what he or she says, and they offer some perspectives for us that lighten what is otherwise sometimes a hard time we might be going through, especially when it comes to parenting. Parenting is one of the great joys and one of the great rewards of life, but let's all be honest about it. It's hard work, too. And sometimes the burden of parenting weighs heavily upon us as we're going through different seasons with our families. So I thought I'd reach for a little bit of humor from the world of the comedian. Some of you are old enough. I'm looking at not only some parents but grandparents, but you remember a guy named Milton Berle, one of the old comedians. I love what he said. If evolution is true, how come mothers only have two hands? That is a great question, all right? That is a really great question. Phyllis Diller, remember her? She says, cleaning your house while your kids are still growing up is like shoveling the sidewalk before it stops snowing. How true is that? We'll update the comedian a little bit. Jerry Seinfeld says, a two-year-old is kind of like having a blender, but you don't have a top on it. And then my personal favorite from Ray Romano. Everybody loves Raymond. He says, children is like living in a frat house. Nobody sleeps, everything's broken, and there's a lot of throwing up. Boy, that is so, so true. Well, Catherine and I are parents of two college-age students. So we've been parents for 21, almost 22 years now. And we can remember back to the day when our first child was born. We remember it like I know you do. And part of the reason we remember it is because we went through a season where we weren't sure whether we could have children or would ever have children. And there are many parents who have gone through seasons like that. But one day the Lord blessed us, and we learned that Catherine was pregnant, and 9 months later, she gave birth to our first child, a son. Both of our kids were born in Houston, Texas, at Women's Hospital there in the medical center, and we almost didn't make it to the hospital the first time because, believe it or not, our first son was born in an ice storm in Houston, Texas. Are you kidding me? It had to be like a 1,000-year storm on the day that he was coming in. But everything went well, you know, except for the fact that he was code blue when he was born. And there was a little bit of stress at that point. The doctors just said he was holding his breath. I mean, an indication of what was coming down the road for us, right? Really, son? Could you have not just breathed? No. But everything went fine. We took that little bundle of joy home, and we did what most parents did. We celebrated the way most parents do. I got this little sign, this blue sign that said, it's a boy. And I proudly planted that in our front, you know, flower bed. And 15 months later, our daughter Caroline was born. And we brought her home, and I got that little pink sign that said, it's a girl. And I put it in the front yard. And as time went on, I just wondered, where's the sign that says it's a parent? Because this was all new to us. We didn't know what to do with these two kids any more than anybody else does. You know, you buy a car and you get an owner's manual. You buy a coffee maker, you get an instruction booklet. You buy a computer, you get a help desk. And you might even, you know, get to buy 24-hour tech support. But where's that when you get a kid? You know, where's the owner's manual? Where's the instruction? Where's the person I can call anytime, anywhere, 24 hours a day when things are not going so well in the household? Nobody gave us an instruction manual. The only instruction we might have gotten from the hospital was feed him when he cries, okay? And I didn't have much to do with that. So here we were as parents. I mean, the most important thing we could ever do in life is to raise these kids. And we didn't know the first thing to do. Now, Catherine and I are not perfect parents, and our kids are not perfect kids. That's not what this series is all about. But what we learned over the years is that in this book we call the Bible, there is an endless supply of divine wisdom for parents and grandparents. And we threw ourselves into it. And we mined that wisdom as best as we could and applied it into our family life and into our parenting. And we got the B-I-B-L-E into our kids as much as we could. But quite frankly, how to do this thing called parenting and, Lord willing, one day grandparenting, if I have to, you know, reach into my own life and my own wisdom and try to build this thing called a family on my own, I will fail. The scripture we're looking at today says, point blank, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. It's not always apparent to parents and parents how to do this parenting thing. But what we're going to try to do over the next 4 or 5 weeks is tap into this endless supply of biblical wisdom for parents and grandparents and try to, well, pull out some plain talk, to try to make apparent to parents and grandparents how to do this thing called parenting and to raise kids who love God. And in doing so, to establish a generational thing that goes on from one family to the next, for generations to come in our family. We're going to start off in Psalm chapter 127, which I read just a moment ago. And I want to just share 4 kind of introductory thoughts this morning about raising kids who love God. I titled this message, The Gift That Keeps on Giving and Taking, because I want to start in verse 3. There are 2 iconic phrases that come from Psalm chapter 123. One is in verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. We'll get to there in a moment. But I want to start in verse 3, which says this, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Another translation says, children are a gift from the Lord. I want to suggest to you, parents, grandparents, as simple as it sounds, that the first way, the plainest way I can say to raise kids who love God is you got to receive those kids as the gift they are from God. That's what the scripture says. Children are a gift from the Lord. Circle the word heritage, or another translation, the word gift. The word reward, the fruit of the womb, is a reward. Have you received those kids as a gift from God? I don't want to assume that that's easy to do because I don't know the circumstances under which those kids arrive. Sometimes they're in hard circumstances, unexpected circumstances. We can think of circumstances that are the worst of circumstances in rape or incest or something like that. You may not have been expecting that child. You may not have wanted that child. You may not have been planning on that child. You may be in the category where you think that child is a surprise, a mistake, or an inconvenience. But I'm here to tell you on the front end, friends, every child, from whatever circumstance, is a gift from God. Because every child is a life, and life is a gift from God. And to receive that child as a gift is step one in raising that child to love God. I don't like to use the word like surprise or mistake. It was not a surprise where God is concerned. And that child was never a mistake where God is concerned. That child is a gift. I say that children are the gift that keeps on giving because every one of us has a testimony, a story to tell about how that child or those children have just enriched our lives in so many ways. I mean, Catherine and I are at a point now where we've gone through, you know, most of the phases. We're kind of quasi-empty nest right now with two kids in college. We've loved every phase, but we're really liking this phase. We're just here to tell you. We weren't quite sure several years ago when the first one went off to college and the second one went off to college. You know, they're kind of back to back. We're thinking, I don't know about this empty nest thing. And it was awkward for the first couple of weeks, and then we got over it. It was wonderful. But the enriching part that we've enjoyed is relating to them as young adults. You know, I mean, you go through the diaper years and the pacifier years and the preschool years and the elementary years and then the high school years and middle school years and all that. And now they're young adults. I mean, every phase has been so enriching. We are better people. I'm a better man because I married this girl named Catherine, and God has used her to make me a better man and a better husband and even a better father. And my kids, God has used them like iron sharpening iron to make me a better man and to enrich our family life in a wonderful way. Kids are the gift that keep on giving, but they're also the gift that keep on taking, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but the job of parenting never ends. And this parenting thing is hard, hard work. If you go into it thinking, this is easy schmeasy, or I can slough it off on a nanny here or a nanny there, you got other things coming. The responsibility falls on you. It falls on me. And it's hard work. And the job never ends. Either you graduate and become grandparents, but even then, as the years go on, the parenting, it's a different relationship, right? My kids are getting to a point where they're old enough to make some of their own decisions on their own, right? And parenting takes on a different role, but we're still getting the text messages at midnight or whenever, you know, I got this question or that question. It's the gift that keeps on taking time and energy. And yes, it's the most expensive proposition you'll ever go through. Trust me, I got two kids in college, right? It just never ends. But children are a gift from the Lord. Two specific ways the text tells us they're a gift. Number one, they're your legacy. Don't ever forget that. The translation I read from originally, verse 3, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Let me ask you a question. How will people remember you? You and I may never be remembered on the pages of some history book, but somebody in your family lineage will remember you. Are they going to remember you for all the time you gave to your employer? Or will they remember you for all that you did in and for your children and your grandchildren? Your kids are a heritage. They're a legacy. You and I are making history every day. Maybe not the kind that ends up on a high school history page or history book, but it's your family history. And it's my family history. We came from a heritage. We're creating a heritage. How will you be remembered? Your children are a heritage from the Lord. He's giving you an opportunity to do something generational here that impacts the world and impacts your family. Secondly, your kids are a gift from God because, they're your best defense. You ever heard of Homeland Security? It's right there in your kids. Listen to this. Verse 4, like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. This is one of these verses of scripture that's most misunderstood in the Bible. A lot of people think that this arrow metaphor that the writer is using here, as he pictures a family like a quiver, full of arrows, where the children are the arrows in the man's quiver or family. That the idea here is that as parents, we're supposed to raise up our kids and launch them out one day like arrows that fly into the future. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Problem is, it just That's not what the text is saying here. That's not what the metaphor means. It fails to take into consideration the culture in which Psalm 127 was written. Because back in ancient times, the size and quality of a man's family or quiver had something to do with the security and status that he had. A man who had a quiver full of arrows had, some homeland security. He would never be ashamed in the gates of the city when the enemy would come to attack, either by military force or some legal attack or something like that, because his children, especially his sons, formed some security for him, would be there to defend the family. And there was a certain status, too, you know, with the large family. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. You know, we kind of look, not down on, but we don't have big families today. The birth rate in America is, in a frightening way, very low. Like, I don't know, 1.5 kids per family is the rate. And sociologists have looked at that and have had concern about it. In ancient times, big families, lots of arrows in the quiver. And back then, families lived within close proximity of one another. It would be a foolish father who launched his arrow, you know, far away from the family. That would take away from the homeland security, right? Now, we live in different times. And a lot of us, you know, we live more than an arrow's distance away from our family. Catherine and I have experienced that throughout our marriage. You know, she from Texas, and I have family in Texas and Indiana. I mean, we've just never really been all that close in proximity to our family. But that doesn't mean that we as adult parents or adult children still don't have a responsibility to honor our parents, to protect them, and to defend the family in some way. That's the picture here. Your children are a gift from God because they're your best defense. They're part of your homeland security. And you don't want them to get too far away. Physically, maybe, but relationally, emotionally, spiritually, all of that, you want to keep them close. So reason number one, or way number one, to raise kids who love God is to receive them as the gift they are from God. Secondly, to make family worship a priority. Here's where I want to dive into a little bit of the context of Psalm 127, a very unique psalm, a very well-known one. Has some iconic phrases in it about the family and building a house and all that, and children who are a gift from the Lord. But Psalm 127 is part of a section of Scripture not only known as the Book of Psalms, but within the Book of Psalms, Psalm 120 to 134 is known as the Psalms of Ascent. There are 15 psalms that made up a songbook for the ancient Jewish people that when they traveled from wherever they lived to the holy city of Jerusalem, for the annual religious festivals, they would literally ascend Jerusalem because Jerusalem is at about 3,000 feet above sea level. So once you get closer to Jerusalem, you begin ascending. And as you can picture in your mind, families traveling in caravans from wherever they lived in the nation of Israel and from the surrounding area, singing these songs together as they were going to the holy city to participate in the festivals and to worship in the temple. One of these songs has to do with family life. They would sing, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord watches over the city, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord." And that picture of families traveling together, heading to the holy city to worship together is just a reminder to us, friends, of the importance, yes, the priority of family worship. You want to raise kids who love God, parents, grandparents, you're going to have to make family worship a priority. In the same way that Joshua did when he was leading a generation of Jewish families across the Jordan River. Remember, Joshua was Moses' successor. Joshua was the one that led them across the Jordan River into the Promised Land. And they took possession of the Promised Land through many conquests. And by Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15, we hear Joshua saying, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua established the family priority of family worship. And I'm just suggesting, parents and grandparents, we have to set the expectation. We have to set the example that family worship is a priority. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will be in church on Sunday. Now, I can just hear some parents saying, but my kids don't want to go to church. My kids don't like church. They think it's boring. And we don't want to force religion on them. Well, try that when it comes to your kids' education. I mean, honestly, how many of your kids and grandkids, if they weren't forced to go to school, would get up 5 days a week before the crack of dawn and go get an education? We know better than that. That's why the government makes education compulsory up to a certain age, right? Otherwise, we raise a generation of illiterate and uneducated kids. And there are truancy laws. Now, you're not going to get that kind of support from the government when it comes to the spiritual education of your family. No, that's on you, that's on me as parents and grandparents. We have to set the expectation, we have to set the example. As for me and my house, family worship is a priority. Reminds me of a story I heard about a mother who was having difficulty getting her child up for church on Sunday. She walks into his room and says, "Son, it's time to go to church." He groans, he rolls over and says, "I don't want to go to church." And she says, "Well, why not?" He says, "I got two reasons. One, they don't like me. Two, I don't like them." And the mother thought for a moment and said, "Well, son, I can give you two reasons why you must go to church. One, you're 45 years old, and two, you're the pastor. I know how hard it is to get kids up to go to church on Sunday. But you got to set the expectation, parents. You got to set the example. It was never a question in the Jones household as to whether or not we went to church on Sunday. And I know what you're thinking. Yeah, because you're a pastor. It was easy. You were a pastor. No, that made it more difficult. Because a pastor's family lives in a glass house. And not only that, the culture has changed. There's so much competition for this time on Sunday morning. A generation has changed that. A generation ago, there were no businesses open. There were no kids' travel sports and competitions that happened all weekend long in another state. None of that was going on when I was growing up. I played baseball, I played basketball, I played football. We might have had a practice on a Sunday night. Do you know now some doctor's offices are taking appointments and seeing patients on Sunday morning? This time that used to be sacred time and sacred space in our culture no longer exists. It is harder, not easier today, to make family worship a priority. But you got to answer this question, friends and parents and grandparents. Do you want to raise kids who love God? I mean, is that really a priority in your family? Then you're going to have to make family worship a priority. Listen to Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25. "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works." We might say, let us consider how to raise kids who love God, not neglecting to meet together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Even 2,000 years ago, when the writer of Hebrews penned these words, he had to encourage people. Don't let other things creep into that habit of being together in worship. Some people are going to be that way. The habit of some is not to gather together. Let's not let that be our habit. And he says, all the more we need the encouragement of being together. We need the encouragement of family worship as the day is approaching. What day is he talking about? He's talking about the awesome day of the Lord when Jesus Christ returns. Friends, I don't know the day or the hour when he will return. The angels don't know the day or the hour. Jesus himself doesn't know the day or the hour, but we're 2,000 years closer to the day or the hour. And we have to decide as parents and as grandparents, as the day is approaching and as the day is upon us, are we going to have child-centered homes or parent-centered homes? Better yet, God-centered homes. And if we're going to have a God-centered home, parents and grandparents, we take the responsibility to set the example and to set the expectation that as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. This house goes to church on Sunday. If you don't like it, when you're old enough to be on your own, you can do what you want to do. That's a parent-centered house. That's a God-centered house. Child-centered parenting is all the rage today. People say, oh, children are like little adults and they have rights just like adults do. No, children are under the authority of their parents. Don't ever abdicate that authority, parents. Sometimes you say, we're going to church because that's what we do and it's what I said, right? But the child-centered family never gets into the habit, maybe because the child says, I don't want to go today. Well, I'll try that on their education. And the truant officer will show up at your doorstep, right? You know what I'm talking about here. Raising kids who love God. Just some plain talk here. Just some plain talk. Trying to make a parent what is not always apparent to parents and grandparents. Third way to do this, depend on the Lord alone to build your house. Let's go back to verse 1 now. Now we're ready for verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Do you believe that? Or do you believe you're a pretty good builder? You know, you can do this family thing all by yourself. You know, what this verse implies is that we're in the construction business, whether we realize it or not. We're building something as parents and grandparents. We're building a spiritual and relational community called a family that has generational implications. And you and I might think we're pretty good builders, but the implication in the text is we're not as good as we think we are. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. I remember when our kids were young, one of the popular kind of cartoons and things that they watched was called Bob the Builder. Remember Bob the Builder? You know, every day, Bob the Builder, can he build it? Yes, he can. You know, it's just this positive, you know, whatever thing for kids. And I just remember thinking as years went on, because I'm not very good with my hands, Ron the Builder, can he build it? No, he can't. The other day, the kids were trying to do something in the yard, and my son looked at me and says, Dad, do we have any tools in the garage? You know, I'm just not the builder type, all right? Not very good with my hands. One time I tried to build a basketball hoop for the kids. Biggest mistake I made was not paying the extra $30 to have, you know, the store assemble it and deliver it, right? So I get this big box. I open it up. The directions look like something in Mandarin Chinese. I'm looking for pictures, anything. I'm spreading out all of these, tools and parts. I spent hours on this thing. I thought I had the project done, and I'm ready to, you know, put this thing upright, and I notice all these other parts sitting over there. My wife comes out and, you know, very, very kindly and gently just picks one of these up. She says, where does this one go, you know? I had a neighbor across the street named Kevin, and he was really good with his hands and, you know, could build anything. He kind of wanders across the street, and with a little grin on his face, he says, I think you built it backwards, you know. So fortunately, you know, he whipped it together, and we had that baby up in no time, and the kids were playing basketball. Ron the Builder, can he build it? No, I can't. And if I think that I can build a family better than I can build a basketball hoop, well, I just need to remember what the scripture says here. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. God the builder, can he build it? Oh, yes, he can. Yes, he can. Depend on the Lord alone to build your house. Remember the first building project in the Bible? Genesis chapter 11, called the Tower of Babel. Man's first attempt to try to build something, and it was a disaster. Eugene Peterson, the pastor and author, says the greatest work project in the ancient world is a story of disaster. The unexcelled organization and enormous energy that were concentrated in the building of the Tower of Babel resulted in such a shattered community and garbled communication that civilization is still trying to recover. Parents, grandparents, let's not let our building project called a family become a story of disaster and a destroyed community called the family because we failed to heed what the psalmist is saying here. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. I'm going to give you a fourth and final way to raise kids who love God. In the context of understanding kids are a gift from God, a gift that keeps giving and receiving. And write this down and then I'll explain what I'm talking about. Support pro-family public policies. Now, go to the middle of verse 1. Notice the shift here. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. The phrase, unless the Lord, appears twice. It's rhythmic, it's poetic, but there's a shift from the house and family life to the city. It took me a while to figure out the connection between the two. Why is it equally important for the Lord to watch over or build the house as it is to watch over the city? Well, for the simple reason that governments, state, local, federal governments, can either make it easy or hard to do this job called parenting, right? In the ancient world, cities had walls around them, and those walls were meant to protect the inhabitants of the city. Many of the people who lived in the city would work outside of the city, maybe farming the land, and they would spend their day outside the city. They would come in at night. There were guards at the gates. And there were watchmen who were placed on the walls, and these watchmen provided 24-hour security for the city. And they would watch off into the distance. And if they saw any approaching danger, they would alert the city. The text here says, unless the Lord watches over the city. In other words, unless City Hall places God first in city life. And by the way, you know, good family life and healthy family life has some connection to governments and cities and communities who value family life and who create policies that make it easier for families. But that's not the case today. We've been a nation that is drifting away from our Judeo-Christian principles, and I believe there is a direct correlation between the family that is in peril and our drifting away from these Judeo-Christian principles. We've kicked God out of the public square, out of City Hall, out of our government, and said, nah, it doesn't belong here. We don't need that religion stuff. And again, a direct correlation over decades here of the decline in the family. I'm not trying to get political here. I'm not trying to tell you who to vote for, but we need some people in Washington and in state and local governments who are pro-family and who establish pro-family public policies that strengthen families and not take away from it. Unless the Lord watches over the city, those who watch, the watchmen. Who are the watchmen today? They're elected officials. And they think they have watch over the city and over the families that are in that city. But unless the Lord watches over that, the watchmen watch in vain. And we will continue to watch the family disintegrate and for it to become harder and harder and harder for parents to do their job in raising kids who love God. And it will have generational impacts in our nation, in our cities, and in our states. So much at stake here. Ben Franklin said years ago, when he was 81 years old, he said, I have lived for a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proof I see of this, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow can fall to the ground without his notice, if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it possible that an empire can rise without his aids? We have been assured in the sacred writings that unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, says Franklin, and I also believe that without this concurring aid, we shall proceed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. So I'm convinced that if we're going to raise kids who love God, you know, just as a starting point, and we got more to talk about in this series, but as a starting point, you got to receive those kids as the gift they are from God. You got to make family worship a priority. You need to depend on the Lord and the Lord alone to build this house. And then whatever it means in your political and citizenry life, support and advocate for pro-family public policies. I'm not talking about any state control, no, in our parenting, absolutely not. But the state, you know, puts policies in place, tax policies and otherwise. It either makes it harder or easier for families to thrive, for family life to be at the center of our experience as citizens of a nature, of a nation. God created the family. It was His idea. Parenting was His idea. Jesus taught us to pray to our Father, our heavenly parent who art in heaven. It's all His idea. Let's put Him first in our family life, in our public life, and we'll have a better chance of raising kids who love God for generations to come.